Good morning, Jay. My name is Pam Lehman. I am 73 years old. Today is September the 2nd, 2021. And I am sitting in my home in Amarillo, Texas. And my conversation partner today is Jay. And my relationship to that conversation partner is we are conversational partners. So that's who I am.
Well, and hi Pam, my name is Jay Parker. I am 55 years old. Today's date is September the 2nd, 2021, and I am sitting in my makeshift office slash studio in Amarillo, Texas. We're both in Amarillo, Texas.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. And my conversation partner is Pam. I've never met Pam before. So we're just simply right now conversation partner.
All right. Okay, hold on just a second. And I have, all right. Thank you for your patience.
Well, Pam, so what made you want to do this interview today?
You know, we live in such a divisive time, and it's my goal or my dream that we could build some kind of relationship and that getting to know each other through this venue that we could take literally one small step to bridging that that divide that we seem to find in our country today.
Wow. You know, I mirror that sentiment exactly. We live in a time where there's so much information that we have access to. And so the question that we have to ask ourselves is, what is the truth? You know? And so, like critical race theory, I feel that everything racial is being accentuated for some reason when it doesn't have to be, you know? And so I'm really excited to get to know you. I read your bio and we have a lot in common.
Yes, we do. You know, as I read that, I thought, they've made a mistake here. We have too much in common to be to be talking about things that divide us. So, yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. And so we can actually look at the world through a different perspective. So I was military. My whole family is military. So I was a military kid like you. My dad, mom, sister, brother, all my cousins, either they're West Point or Air Force Academy or And so then I served as well. So we can look at things a little different in regards to the racial divide. I didn't know that there was a racial divide until I was 11, until Roots came out. I said, oh, wow.
Well, that's so interesting. And I hope we can pursue this line of conversation after we do the necessities here. So,
yes, ma'am.
Okay.
That would be great. So yeah, we let's see. So okay. So the question says, Jay read Pam's bio out loud as written, and I did, and found that we had a lot in common. So what in the bio would I like to know more about? I'd like to know more about your experience as a military brat, like I was.
Well, I tell you, I had what I consider maybe a unique relationship with the military, because during the time that my dad was serving, and he was career Air Force, but my mother was extremely ill. And so we lived apart from my dad because of that. And also because much of the work that he was doing was secret. And so much of the time, probably until the end of his career, I hardly ever knew what it was he was doing. And so that was different, but we did move a lot, and I encountered what I would later learn. There's wonderful people everywhere, and there are people everywhere that are suspicious of people they don't know, people that are different from them. As an Air Force brat, sometimes I've faced what I would consider just outright rejection, just because I was an outsider. But sometimes within the military families themselves, there was a lot of bonding that took place because we were all kind of in the same boat, literally.
Again, we have a lot in common. You're right. As a military kid, off base was a very unpleasant experience. And to exacerbate the fact that I was an outsider and a military kid, the fact that I was African American was really, I really had to be careful. And this was back in the 70s. And even though my mom and dad broke up when I was 11, we still went to see Dad, and we were all over the world. And abroad, it was a much more enjoyable experience. But it was when we came back to the States that we really got to see the racial divide. And but when we were on base, there were softball games, and you know, there were barbecues, and went to the beach, and with our military families, and we had Caucasian friends, Hispanic friends, Asian friends, Black friends, everybody sharing the same experience as either a United States Air Force member or a dependent. So I really enjoyed my time in the military. But the great thing about it is I didn't know that there was racism until I was 11. So that was kind of already instilled in me. And so I didn't see color, even though there was a lot of people that were rude to me because of my color, but I didn't see it because we were military and red, white, and blue. those were the colors that we paid attention to and stood for. So, but getting older, as I got older, I got to see it, and it took a lot within me to hold my ground, because I'm a Christian. To hold my ground and not to judge and not to retaliate. And it hurt a lot, but it really served me well.
You know, perception seems to be everything. And when I was growing up, and of course I'm quite a bit older than you are, but in the military, I saw, like you said, there was no color barrier. Everybody was who they were, even though there were ranks of people, we were all in this together. And I am like you, color was not an issue when I was in that world. And it wasn't until I went to live with my grandparents. And I can remember, for whatever reason, I don't even remember why now, but we went to the courthouse and I saw the signs that said colored water fountain and colored restroom. And I had to ask, what in the world is that? And so for me, the military was a place where those barriers were not there. So that was a good thing growing up for me.
Yes, ma'am. Yeah, it was pleasant. I was allowed to be a kid. I mean, you know, and it was amazing. It wasn't until, when I was 11, we moved from actually Panama to DC. And that's when my mom and dad broke up. And DC is predominantly, in our community, was predominantly African American. And that's when I saw, I was like, oh my God, you know, what just happened? And then we would come back to Amarillo, because this is where my mom is from, to see my grandparents. And then that was another culture shock, you know. But then I got to see the hearts of people, and the ignorance of not even wanting to get to know someone of another race, and to see their character. And, you know, they might not have character, you know, but that's to be decided once you do the study, you know. But yeah, it's the most amazing thing, and to see it alive and well today, but in a subliminal way, is even more atrocious to me, to see how, so we all have prejudice. When we're driving in a car and a white guy cuts you off in his pickup truck, what's the first thing that comes in your mind? That white guy just cut me off. And it always goes to race. So we all have a job to do in order to suppress what the environment says is acceptable. It's not acceptable. So yeah, I just that's where I am on that.
Well, you know, as a pastor, I see this same kind of thing happening with religion, is that we seem to stand in judgment of those that are different than us for whatever reason. And yet what I have found is that there are many religions that have things that are of value. They may not be like us, but they still have things to teach us, just like the Jewish people and their love of the Sabbath is so much greater than Christian people. And so I find that...
Pam?
Yes.
On. Oh, there we go. Okay, we're back. He's back. No problem.
My phone was ringing, and I didn't know that if I put it on airplane mode, it would just kill my service. So I know that. Okay, I'm sorry. Okay, I'm sorry, Miss Pam. I lost about 15 seconds.
That's fine. I just think that there are ways that we categorize people, whether it's race or religion or gender or whatever it is, and we make those judgments. And yet, when we open ourselves to learn from other people, we're all alike. We're all humans, and so
so I'm gonna go deep. So you're a pastor, and I hope you can appreciate what I'm getting ready to say. The Bible says that in the last days, well, Jesus said in Matthew 24 that the number one thing that we need to be watching out for is deception, and so it's widespread. And so you've got a lot of people that are in the church that are kind of like playing Christian, and the race issue exacerbates the whole thing. We've got black churches, we've got white churches, we've got all Hispanic churches, but we're all in one body, you know. And so I believe that the racial divide is just one weapon that we decide to use in order to keep the chasm open, you know. And so the things that we've learned or heard, not even having experienced them, they shouldn't even come into play if we truly are Christians. We should give a man the respect of being a spirit, another speaking spirit, a soul, a creation of Almighty God, until they prove you wrong, you know?
All of us created in the image of God, regardless of what we look like on the outside. One of the things, as I read your bio, and I wondered about all the places that you had lived and how that formed who you are today.
Oh, wow. I remember, well, I was born in California, and so that was different, you know? And so we didn't stay there long, but then we ended up in Texas at Lackland. And then when I was about four, we ended up at Grissom in Indiana. And then Dad got orders to Turkey. And so he spent a year in Turkey, and then he got orders to Greece. And so then we went to Greece. So I spent my between 4.5 and 5.5 years old, we lived in Greece. It was amazing, and to see the other cultures and to see how entitled we are as Americans was, you know, because I would ask my mom something out in public as a 5-year-old, and she was like, shh, be quiet, you know, be quiet. You know, you don't want to let them know what we have. We're light-skinned enough, we can pass, you know, shh, be quiet, you know. And so then after that, we got stationed in Panama, and that's where I got to see the overwhelming poverty. And I was blown away. So I was about 6 or 7 at that point, but I was old enough to realize, wow, we've got it good, you know. And so I think we didn't go to church much back then. So I was just, and Dad was partying, Mom was partying, you know, they're in their 20s overseas with money. And so we're just kind of forced to mold ourselves out of what we saw. I realize now that my parents couldn't teach us how to be better because they were in their early 20s, and they didn't know how to be better. It wasn't until later that that me and my dad had a really good talk, and he began to be my mentor. But yeah, the places that I lived really taught me a lot. And then as a military member, to go to places like Panama and to go to England and Germany and Korea. Korea is what built my whole belief system, because now I'm in my mid-20s at this point, and I'm going to my first sergeant saying, why can't I have my car here, you know? And he's saying, you can't have your car here because you don't have rank enough. But and then I realized after I looked into the community in Seoul, no one had a car. They if they really were doing well, they had a moped or a bicycle. And so I think that made me grateful. And so I think my whole persona is built around gratitude, because I should be dead and stinking in my grave, man. You know? But God is good, and I'm alive, and I get to see how I can be of service to people, and that's what I do for a living now.
Oh, I never. The only time my dad was ever overseas, he was in Korea right after the Korean War, and so we were not able to go with him. But I have gotten to travel overseas twice, and each time that has taught me something valuable. We went to England one time, and I can remember riding on the tube in London and seeing such a plethora of different kinds of people speaking so many different languages. And yet, there they were, all getting along with each other. So insightful to see that we can do that if we just are willing to do that.
Are willing.
Of
So
willing.
do you believe that do you believe that, well, I know that we're all subject to our environment and, you know, the things we learn from, you know, our development and things like that, but do you believe that that's something that we can't overcome, the racial divide? I mean,
Let me make sure I understood that. Do I believe we cannot overcome the racial divide?
do you believe that we can?
Oh, do we believe? Okay, yes, I believe that we can. And I think the way to do that is just like what we are doing today, one-on-one or in small groups, getting to know other people and their experiences and what they've been through. And even the bad things that they've experienced and the good things that they've experienced.
Yeah, I believe that same way. We have way too much in common to be on this chat.
Yes. We do. We do.
You know, Ms. Pam, since I've been, when I got out of the military, I was in Atlanta. I went to Atlanta. I spent 27 years, and that's predominantly African-American too. And so I moved back to Amarillo because my mom wanted to come home. And so I said, wow, you're going to make me leave. I told myself, I'll never go back to Amarillo, you know. But I tell you, man, there's so much work to do. Once I stop concentrating on myself, there's so much work to do. And I'm the executive director of the Black Historical Cultural Center, the Amarillo United Citizens Forum. I'm going to change the name because I don't believe color should be an issue. It's multicultural. But I have ran into a lot of people that serve the center, and I serve them through the center, and white and Black, affluent, you know, not affluent. And I tell you, this Amarillo is such a multicultural place. It could be, it's a diamond in the rough already, but it could be the most enjoyable place if we had programming that pushed diversity. And like we're doing here, I think we're going to be friends after this, but I think that it's really, really important to understand if I have money, that guy doesn't have money enough to put gas in his car. You know, so we don't have empathy for people because we have never experienced it. And I believe that if we open up, then we can better understand the plight and then be of service in some way to them. And so, yeah, it's I'm having an amazing time in my life right now, serving people.
Well, tell me the name again. I mean, I know you're going to change it, but Black Historical Cultural
Center.
Okay.
Yeah, it's Amarillo United Citizens Forum. That's the nonprofit that it's under, but it's actually a community center. And when I got back, I left it 84, and I think they broke ground and completed it in 85. So I never saw it. And so when I came back this time, I said, what is that center on the corner, Ma? You know, she's like, oh, that's the Black Historical Cultural Center. I said, ooh, that is so abrasive right there. but that was, I guess that was the environment in which they were developing their concept of community, you know?
Exactly.
But I'm a Christian. And so I believe that it's going to be the multicultural center of North Heights. Because everybody's welcome. You can come there and you can get some food. If I have the funding, I can pay your bill, you know, and we want to do that for everybody, for everyone. And so color is just exacerbating everything. It's the most amazing thing. And my grandma used to tell me that. It's going to come a day where you won't be able to tell a man from a woman. And then the Bible says that the races are just going to come against each other. I said, nah. She was right. She was right. So we got to change that, at least in our own circle of influence.
Yes, exactly. So it looks like we have another question. Who has been the most influential person in your life, and what did they teach you?
Okay, Ms. Pam, who has been the most influential person in your life? I said, I need time to think.
Okay.
And what did they teach you?
Okay. Well, because growing up, I was not always with my dad, and my mother was not well. When I married, my father-in-law was such an influence on me. He was a strong Christian. He was compassionate. He was... He loved the Bible and what it stood for. And he was a doer. He was involved. We lived in a really small little town in the Panhandle. But he got involved in the community and tried to make it a better place to be. And so he taught me about service to the community and about reaching out and trying to help other people and trying to understand where they were coming from. And so he was that kind of influence to me. And even though my husband and I divorced, he was always there for me, my father-in-law. And I think he was very understanding of the trials that both my husband and I were going through, and stood as a non-judgmental person for us. So,
that's amazing.
Yeah, it is.
It's hard to find someone in your life that way, you know, that really, really loves you.
Yes.
Especially in these times. And so I would say that it was my father too, but my story is different. My dad was a party animal. Oh my gosh, man, this guy, he was a hot mess. And I used to just sit there and go, how can you drink so much and not go to sleep? And so he lived hard for the world. He did. He was a handsome guy. He was a lady killer, you know, he thought. And he was kind of grimy too, you know, because he would do whatever he needed to do to fulfill his objective. But then he got saved. Golly. And I saw him move in the opposite direction within a few months. And that really impacted me because I was struggling in my Christian walk too. And I had no one, you know, my elders that were really walking it out. We were just playing church, you know. But my dad got saved as hard as he worked to on self in the world. He did that for the Lord, and I was blown away. He got saved, I think I was almost 30, and I had been saved for maybe 10 years, but not really. You know, not really. I just called myself a Christian. I wasn't doing nothing for nobody. And but he said, we've got to take ourselves off center stage and help people. And so I have a really short story. My dad did a mission trip to Guatemala after he retired. And the people of Guatemala, the indigenous people, were having church in what seemed to be a hut, but it had no floor. They were trying to raise money to get a floor in there. And so they didn't raise much. And my dad is his first time on a mission. He was the only Black guy on the mission. And so he wasn't really respected. He was a new Christian. And so they took him there as not to serve the people, but to clean up. He retired, senior master sergeant, cleaning up. But anyway, they sent him there to clean up. He humbled himself and he cleaned up. And he retired in South Dakota. So that's predominantly Indian and Caucasian. And so they were watching him. And so he was cleaning up, and they intentionally left the offering in the basket by the altar to see what he would do. They set him up, they thought, but God was good in him. And so he picked the basket up. He looked at it. They said he looked at it for like 10 seconds, trying to decide what he was going to do. And then he went in his pocket and pulled out a knot of 20s and took the clip off of it and just dropped it all in there and walked out the back door. He never said anything, but that's to the extent of his transformation. And I believe that if we just concentrate one day at a time to do better every day, I believe that we have the potential to make those transformations. We won't always succeed, but if my dad can do it, anybody can do it, you know, through faith, Christ of course. So,
What a wonderful story.
I'm sorry I got long-winded. I just love talking about my dad. I love talking about the Lord too. Sorry. Okay, so your dad was influential. Could, but it says here, could you briefly describe in your own words your personal political views? Uh-oh, here we go.
Until Trump came along, I was pretty much what I would call apolitical. I didn't involve myself in politics. I didn't talk about politics. And that I learned that from my father, because in the service, you don't talk about the commander in chief. We never talked politics at home. But when Trump came along, it helped me to define what I thought I believed. And I'm still very quiet about what I believe, but I saw in him someone who did not tell the truth and who did not live up to what my expectations were of a Christian. And so I found myself just taking a stand against the things that he proposed. So I would have to, at this point, call myself a Democrat, even though there were many times in my life when I voted Republican. I see that both sides of the political spectrum have value and benefit. But for me, leadership is key. And if the leadership is corrupted, then I think that just trickles down. I think people need to stand up for what's right, not for what's red or what's blue. So.
Right. I agree in part. Now Trump hit the stage and he was disingenuous but he hit the scene as a businessman turned politician. So he was already used to downgrading his value system in order to move forward in whatever he was trying to do. And yeah, you are absolutely right. There's a lot of things that I didn't agree with him, but I do believe that he made some sound business decisions regarding the country. And I guess I learned to tolerate him, you know? I learned to tolerate him because it was Barnum and Bailey Circus. Every time I turned on the news, it was always something, but much hasn't changed at the same time. And like you say, we never talk negatively about our commander in chief, even as retired or veterans, we don't. But I can talk about the situation and the truth and how in both administrations, the truth seemed to be something that they didn't subscribe to a lot of the time. We've got a situation here in this country that we've got an open border. We're sitting here in Amarillo, Texas. I came from the capital of human trafficking, which is Atlanta. And I see it happening here. I'm getting Amber Alerts on my phone at least 3-4 times a week. Children are coming up missing. Drugs are flooding the Heights. But people that don't live in an underserved community don't necessarily see that. It's the most amazing thing how we can leave our service members and fellow Americans behind enemy lines. And see, America doesn't necessarily understand what's going on over there. And like I said before, we're flooded with so much information. What is the truth? And so we've got to ask the Lord, what is the truth? We've got to search our word. What is the truth? And actually be open to seeing what he shows you, you know? Because deception is widespread. And I don't think one president is better than the other. They both have monumentous flaws. But I don't believe that. I believe that it's up to the people. I believe that we need to get stronger at the polls so we can vote in who we know. Well, we can't know, but who we discern to be somebody of of great moral fortitude. And then help them to stay that way, because when they get to Congress, man, they change. They become millionaires, you know? And so we got to make sure that we stand up for our community and be honest about it and hold our leadership accountable, whether they're Trump or Biden, have to hold them accountable. And it's our money. You work for us. And they've missed that point. And they've done a lot of things without our input. And here we are. So...
Well, and I certainly agree with you. It seems like it's just a human flaw that power corrupts. And so I don't know how we overcome that except through the vote. And thank goodness we live in a country where we can vote. But I think we have lost sight, and you're right, Democrat or Republican, there are people who are not accountable and who have made bad decisions and who make many decisions based on the fact that they want to stay in office rather than for the good of the people. And so I don't know how we overcome that. I have some ideas, but it just seems like we've got to vote with not only our hearts, but our heads, and be able to trust the people that we elect.
So. Right. Yeah. And you know, ultimately, Ms. Pam, it's our fault. It is, because I live in a community that is underserved, and most of the time the community as a whole gets the short end of the stick. But it's not the municipality's fault. It's not the folks, the people who govern. It's not their fault. If you buy a pit bull, you can best believe if you don't treat him right, he's gonna nip at you, he's gonna bite you. And so I believe that the accountability is twofold. We allow things to happen and we don't stand up for them. And when bad things happen. And so, you know, if you continue to let the pit bull bite you, he's really gonna take a chunk out of you. And so that's what we are. So we don't hold those elected and appointed officials accountable. And then when they slip or drop the ball or are disingenuous, we don't call them out. So the fault can be shared, you know? And it's our fault. We elect the governing body. And if we allow those things to continue to happen, and we can agree to disagree, but we don't even do that. You know, we just kind of sit back and go, wow, I hate that happened. And you just adjust to it. And that's not God's best for us. He says that government is put in place as a strong arm for him, you know, and when we see our political, when we see our elected officials stealing and cheating and withholding information, wow, and we allow it to happen, then we're the fault as well. And we can see it. It's right in your face, the things that are happening to us, not just this community as a nation.
Right. Well, I agree. And there's a story, and I cannot remember who the author was, but it goes kind of like this. And it was about Hitler, and he came for a certain group of people, and I didn't stand up because I wasn't in that group. And then he came for another group of people, and I didn't say anything because they weren't my people. And this just keeps going and going and going until he says, and then they came for me, and there was no one left to stand up for me. And so we do have to take a stand, as painful sometimes as that is. We need to stand up for what's right and hold those people accountable.
Yes, ma'am. I think that we're so afraid of public opinion. I was the same way. I was just like my dad, you know. He was went and got his nails done. He'd take me along and get a haircut, take me along. Just manicure. How a young black man getting a manicure and a pedicure in the 70s? But he did, you know. He was so selfish, you know. And I was too. And it wasn't until he showed me that we can't be center stage. Our whole existence is we exist for other people. We are the answer to the prayers of people. And God doesn't rain manna out of the sky anymore. He uses men and women to bless men and women. And so I think that there's so much negative press being pumped through our devices and our TV that we don't see the good in the world anymore. And so we concentrate on those things, but the Bible says that where sin abounds, grace abounds all the more. And so as we stand without self in mind, I don't care about my reputation. I tell you, man, I don't care. I used to, I don't anymore. I don't care about, you know, how my car looks. I just don't care. I mean, I wanted to run, you know, but I don't care. I want to do what God tells us to do. He tells us to love our brother as we love ourselves, but we first have to have some self-love, you know, in order to love somebody. And there's no better feeling than spreading the gospel to somebody or paying somebody's bill and expecting nothing back, knowing that they're probably just gonna be back in, you know, in 90 days and get it again. But you know, it's just, you can't be weary in doing the right thing. I think that we've lost that, and the people that do have a heart to serve don't have a heart to stand. So I stand. I don't care. I don't. Yes, ma'am. Sorry about that.
So okay. Our next question: what does it mean to be a resident of the High Plains, and what are the traits or characteristics of people living in this region that they share? Characteristics they share. That's an interesting question. You know, I think we have in this area, as opposed to some other places that I have lived, kind of a can-do spirit. And yet, I see, especially like in churches, they always say 20% of the people are doing 80% of the work. And so I think one of the things that we need to do is to nurture those people that have that can-do spirit and continue to teach that. And I don't know whether it's because we have such pioneer roots out here or because there's so few of us, but I see this, I think, and you intimated this, that there is an opportunity in this area to be a more multicultural place, that we don't tend to put people in boxes as much as other places that I have lived and say, well, you're this, so therefore you can only do that. I don't see that in this area because it takes all of us pulling together, because there are not as many of us to make things happen. So that's one of the wonderful things I think about this part of the world.
I agree. And you know, Miss Pam, I was shocked when I came back to Amarillo and saw how diverse it was. I was like, okay, you know, I can hang out here for a little while. but this is my home now. I love it. And Amarillo, well, the High Plains actually is a really, really great place. We've managed to more than other regions in the country hang on to at least a core value, you know? And I see that. I see the diversity in Amarillo and in the High Plains, Plainview and Canyon is really amazing, because I've never seen that before. I've lived in either predominantly all African-American or all all Caucasian, you know, those sorts of environments, but to see us come together. Only thing we need now is Christ, you know, on the wide scale. We need revival, yeah. So we could do what you're leading to, discipleship. But Ms. Pam, here in 79107, we've got almost 50 churches, and you can count on two fingers to give you a really detailed percentage. You can count on two fingers who are actually doing for the community outside of their own congregation. And that's sad. It's sad. And so, yeah, I think that we need revival, Ms. Pam, because we can't do what we haven't experienced. We can't truly love people to the point where we'll begin to really help. Without Christ, we can't.
Yeah.
So, you know, just go ahead and put a lid on that can. We can't.
Well, wouldn't it be wonderful if in your zip code, if those 50 churches could find a way to come together to have some of these kinds of conversations? I know I served in a town outside of Amarillo, a church that had, a city that had 50 plus churches in it. It was a much smaller place. But they had so many churches because they couldn't get along with each other. And wouldn't it be a wonderful thing to try to bring them back together and have those conversations like we're doing right now?
Yeah, it really would. I think that's what we need, just to get back to the value system that built this country. We got critical race theory in the schools, and everybody put their, you know, they're saying, yeah, the slaves built the China people built the railroads, the slaves built the farms, and that is not, I mean, it's the truth, but it's not the totality of the truth. The truth is we all built this country, all of us, together. We did it, even though we had differences, major differences, but we all built this nation, and to lose sight of that is the most egregious thing. We have to bind back together, like you said, and have these conversations in order to agree to disagree if we have to, but at least agree towards a direction.
Right.
Yes, ma'am.
Well, and one of the things, and I don't know whether this addresses our next question or some other question that's going to be further down the line, but I lived for 2 years, very short period of time, but in New Mexico. And that was in a culture I'd never been exposed to before. The indigenous people, the first people, I think they like to be called in many cases. And
were they arrogant or were they, how were they? I'm sorry.
Pardon. Most of the ones that I encountered were Pueblo Indian people. And the sins that we have done to those people. And so that's a whole nother group of people that don't have a place at the table a lot of times. And I don't find those people here in Amarillo, but that's just another place where we need to have some healing for our country.
Yes, ma'am. Wow. Yeah. I my dad lived in South Dakota, and there are a lot of indigenous people there too. And you're right. They've been given a band-aid with the casinos and some of the land, but that doesn't solve the problem. They need a seat at the table.
Right.
Like you said, I understand completely. But we all have a responsibility to that end. We need to stand up. And you have a lot of Indians and Hispanics and people that are coming over here that do stand up, but they kind of feel, I believe that they kind of feel powerless because we have such a monster fall of red tape and doing everything, you know?
Yes. Yes, we have. And we've created that. And it seems intentional that we make it hard for people to come to this country and begin to participate in meaningful ways because they're struggling just to make ends meet.
Right. Yeah, so, they don't have the means to fight the fight.
Exactly. Exactly.
So. You have the executive committee, you have a subcommittee, you got a subcommittee. It's like, okay, so what are we going to do? Let's get rid of all these committees. Let's come together, talk about it, find a direction, agree on something and implement it. But we've complicated our whole political system is just over complicated. And like you said, I believe that it's a roadblock to any sort of success, unless you have the means to fight the fight, which most people don't. Yeah. So.
Well, and sometimes it just takes, it takes one person to reach out to another and say, let me help you. Let me be a stepping stone for you so you can meet your potential. I know the little town that I spent so much time in had a tiny packing plant. And lots of the people that went to work there and that were drawn to that community were Hispanic, and they came because there were jobs. And so one family in particular came. They couldn't speak a word of English, like so many of them. But someone took that family under their wing, and one of their children then grew up to be one of the principals in the in the school. And so what a success story, just because someone was willing to reach out and help.
Yeah, that's amazing. Wow. What a story. And you know, Ms. Pam, I believe that most people don't want to put themselves out there because we've been burnt before, you know. And the Bible says that in the end days, the love of many shall wax cold because of how we're treating one another. And so we don't take a chance. And what an awesome story, how the guy can't grow up and become a principal. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because someone sowed into them. Yeah.
So maybe that's the answer. Our takeaway from this conversation today is that we've taken a chance talking to each other. And I think that's made us both, it's helped us both grow and see potential in that.
I believe so too. I really enjoyed talking to you. And so there's really only one point we really didn't agree on, but we agreed to disagree.
There you go.
We agreed to disagree. And so I really enjoyed it. I'd like to keep in contact with you if that's okay.
Sure. I would like to do that also. So maybe we can facilitate that after we finish this recording.
Okay, that sounds good.
You guys, thank you so much. You know how you hope conversations, I mean, you never, when we start these, they're organic and they have a life of their own. And so I just, your thoughtfulness and the depth that you both went, I really appreciate that. Just
thank you so much.
Well, yes, thank you for the opportunity.
Well, and I think also, you know, you did ask, we seem like we have so much in common. You really do. But also within your questionnaire, you saw yourselves differently in terms of, like, on the scale of conservative beliefs in social, economic, and political, there was a enough of a range difference, you know what I mean, to come together. But I have to tell you, I love hearing your military experiences and how that, I just thought that was very interesting. And and your spiritual connections as well. So thank you so much. I'm going to stop the recording.